This week's parsha is Bahar, and today is also Lag BaOmer, and it's the first Yahrzeit for my nephew Donnie Morris. So I just want to dedicate our learning in his memory. It's actually very beautiful in school today at Farber at Akiva. So they dedicate all the learning today also in his memory, which is really special. And as I was going through the parsha, I don't have any major chidushim tonight, just to point out that this parsha, I think, in a very profound way, really reflects my nephew, because the parsha is a parsha that's all about emunah. It's all about faith in Hashem. It's about a love for the land of Israel, and it's about kindness. It's all about taking care of other people, which are all three of those were attributes that my nephew had of his. And a dedication to Israel, learning in Israel, ultimately wanting to settle in Israel, and certainly a very profound faith in Hashem, a love to daven, took his davening so seriously and his Torah study so seriously. And in addition, he was known for just being a very sweet boy, a kind boy, thoughtful, didn't ever try to embarrass anyone. My brother last night told the story about the time that his leg was. He broke his leg broke, and I told him a story of what happened when they went to Washington. What he didn't share is that Hal's leg broke, and it was during some game, color war game at school. And it was really so I get the sense it was like one kid who was a little too rough, and it wasn't intentional, but in the game that they were playing, so he got the leg was broken, and but he never told my brother and sister-in-law who the kid was. Like, he didn't want to, hurt the kid, embarrass the kid or anything. I think at one point the kid actually came crying to my brother to apologize. My brother said, "I had no idea it was you." My nephew Donnie never shared it with us. Again, this is a parsha that again, reflects this notion of kindness and taking care of others. So again, I'm not going to focus on any one thing, but just to bring out a couple, I think, very fascinating points about the parsha. So first, regarding emunah, faith in Hashem. So the parsha begins, and it's apropos to this year, the Shemitah year in Israel. It's the parsha talks about Shemitah, and we know that one of the fundamental ideas of Shemitah is placing our faith in God and recognizing that ultimately everything is from Hashem, everything that occurs, and certainly our sustenance. Ultimately, we do a lot of work. We put in a lot of effort. We plow the field. We prune. And we plow and we plant, harvest, but ultimately everything comes from Hashem. And therefore we have the Shemitah, which tells us once every 7 years to rest and to take a break and ultimately to place our trust in Hashem. And the Torah, in fact, tells us, and this is the halacha, it's actually recorded in the Shulchan Aruch, that normally you're not allowed to hoard. There's actually a whole Gemara in Maseches Bava Basra. Right now there's this whole crisis with baby formula, and so this whole question: how many are you allowed to buy? And if you take too many, are you harming other people? So there's a whole discussion in Gemara Bava Basra about this particular issue: what happens in a time of famine in terms of what are you allowed to stockpile for, how much, how long? One of the things the Gemara says, based on the pasuk in this week's parsha, is that going into Shemitah, you're allowed on this in the sixth year, you're allowed to collect enough supplies, produce that will last you 3 years, because you're going to need it for the sixth year, you're going to need it for the seventh year when you can't work the land, and then the eighth year also when you just have to plant again. So until things are ready, so you're going to need it for 3 years. But so you're allowed to stockpile and take in extra. But the Torah also tells us that that in that sixth year, you could ask the question, who said I'll have enough in the sixth year to last 3 years? So Hashem says, I'll give it to you. But CVC, you'll be blessed in the sixth year. You'll have enough grain for 3 years. Now that's a profound statement and a wonderful promise that Hashem makes for us. But again, and us observing Shemitah demonstrates that we believe in that it's actually going to last, that we actually will be, things will be okay. Hashem will provide for us. And then, in addition to the Shemitah, so we also then, of course, then are told about the Yovel, Jubilee. And the Yovel, what happens in the Yovel? In the Yovel, So any Eved Ivri, any Jewish slave that you own, even if the Eved stays more than 6 years, the Eved wanted to remain for longer, had his ear pierced, that Eved goes free at the Yovel, the Jubilee year. In addition, it's another year of not working the land, similar to the seventh Shemitah year. And also, any land that you brought from you bought from someone else, you purchased, someone's ancestral land, you have to return it to them, which is amazing. You have to return their ancestral land back to them. You cannot keep it, right? So, you know, you bought this land 7, 6, 7, 8 years ago, you know, and you used it well, and the person was happy to sell it to you, but you have to give it back to them. When it comes to the Yovel, and the Sefer Achinuch, and explaining this mitzvah, says what's this mitzvah all about? He says B'shar she'a mitzvah al tzadab shat shiratz Hashem odia amo kakol shalo. God wanted to remind us at the end of the day, everything belongs to Hashem. Kili kol aretz, it's my it's my earth. Hashem aretz b'lo, the entire earth belongs to God. And everything that you have, you got to give back. Because the land is God's. The land is mine. And therefore, what do? You know, any land that you purchased, it ultimately has to go back to the person who has the ancestral right to it, right? That it was given to them, that family, when they originally entered Israel. A slave, a human being, even that person, it's not yours, right? Ultimately, every person belongs to Hashem, and you cannot maintain and keep that ever, that slave, but you have to allow that person to go free. And again, it demonstrates one's faith in Hashem and one's belief in Hashem and one's commitment that, again, even though I made these purchases, but I have to let go and that things will be okay. Now, the Torah also, you know, understands that there's not always in our best economic interest to do this. So the Torah does tell us in this expression, whenever you buy land, you sell it knowing that I'm only going to have it for a certain period of time. In other words, if the Yovel's coming in 11 years, so the deal that you make to buy the land, this goes to the person who's selling it to you, their ancestral plot, they can't sell for such an exorbitant price because they know that it's only going to be temporary, the sale. Right, it's only for 11 years and not longer in that particular scenario. So that makes an interesting transition to the other aspect of the parsha, the chesed component, the idea of taking care of one another. I'll come back to that just in one moment. There's another interesting halacha regarding real estate in this week's parsha, and that is something that's just the opposite of what I just said, right? The halacha is that when it comes to land that you purchase, so it goes back to the original owner at Yovel, with one major exception. And what's the major exception? So this is fascinating. And this has to do with, I think, the way the Sefer Achinuch explains, has to demonstrate a love for the land of Israel. And that is the following. What happens if you sell property, a house, in a Bate Arichoma, in a walled city? You live in the old city of Jerusalem. It's a walled city, and you have an apartment there. It's your apartment. It goes back for generations in your family, and you sell it to someone else. So does that go back at the Yovel? The answer is no. Right, this is the exception to the rule. What happens? So the Torah tells us the following. Torah says. The Ish, this is in the beginning of Chamishi. Vish ki yimkor beis moshav ir choma v'aysa gloso atom shnas min karo yamim tiyel gloso. You have 1 year to redeem it. 1 year if you're able to have enough money to buy it back, you actually are entitled to buy it back. The person has to sell it back to you for 1 year. However, bim lo yigael amalos lo hashanat mima, but if a year went by and you didn't buy it back, that you can never get it back. You can never force it back. Even Yovel doesn't give it back to you. So why is that? Right? As we say in Gemara terms, my nafkamina. What's the difference? Right? Why if I sell a piece of a property, real estate outside a walled city, that I get back at the Yovel, right? Whether it's a house, whether it's a piece of land. When it comes to this house in a walled city, that I don't have a right to get back. It's very strange. So the Sefer HaChinuch, he discusses this as well, and he tells us the following. If I can find it, says that. Get the exact language. Yeah, so first he talks about that Shalom Nimkar Sada Eretz Yisrael Itzmisus. You're not allowed to sell land permanently in the land of Israel. He says it's similar to Shemitah, right? It's showing that Hashem ultimately owns everything. But then when it comes to this private or this, it comes to this one particular this house in the walled city, so there, the difference is the following. There, you have to buy it back within a year because we don't want you to sell it, right? That particular house, we want you. Here's a word. I'll read it in English. He says, it demonstrates the belovedness of the land. A house in a walled city in the land of Israel should be so beloved and dear to its owner by inheritance that if he sold it, he should go to any length to get it back. And if he did not, then he's the sale. It's the fact they can't get it back is a penalty. In other words, we don't want you to sell that. That's your house, right? People lived in walled cities back in the day. That was your house that you lived in. That was your day to day, you know, home that you went to, and that was something that Hashem wanted you to keep. Hashem wanted you to show your love for Israel. Why would you sell a piece of land in Israel, right? This is your house. Right? How could you leave that? How can you just, you know, let it go? And therefore, we don't want you to sell that. We want you to keep that. And therefore, the Torah says if you do sell it, 1 year to get it back, because it wants to encourage you to get it back. It doesn't want you to to give it up. But if you didn't show that commitment, then you lose out after the year. In other words, I guess when it comes to like land and buying and, you know, produce, so those are types of things for business purposes, you know, you buy and sell. But your house, right, that your actual house, that we want you to maintain, right? That we want you to live in, and not to give up, not to give to someone else. Yeah, so this demonstrates again the love that we're supposed to have, and the commitment we're supposed to have for the land of Israel. Most of the other mitzvos in this week's parsha then focus on the third theme, the theme of taking care of other people, right? The thing of kindness and sensitivity towards other people. And so, for example, again, you have this idea of the slave going free at the Yovel. Another example is the fact that the Torah says in two places that lo sonu, you can't afflict another person. And Chazal understands it's referring to two different things. One is in terms of money, that when you sell something to someone, this could be, you know, anything, whether it's real estate or it's a movable property, it has to be a fair price. You can't overcharge someone, right? You can't play games, and the way Rashi understands it, sometimes a person doesn't know, you know, a person doesn't know that, you know, that what you're selling, that it's, you know, what it's really worth. And you could potentially grossly overcharge them. Or the flip side, you might buy something from someone, you know, it's worth an antique, it's worth, you know, so much money, they think it's a piece of junk. See, so you're tricking them because you're not giving them information that you know. So you're not going to do that either. You can't buy something at a low price when you know it's really worth a lot. It has to be something. That's a fair price, buying and selling. And then in addition to that, the other prohibition is that you're not allowed to afflict a person with words, right? You're not allowed to harm someone in terms of, you know, the language that you use. You have to be careful. The Gemara even says you have to be careful, even when you're, like, in a store, like not to give the false impression that you're going to buy something when really you're not, you know, because you're going to make someone hopeful that you're going to make a purchase and you don't. So a lot of details regarding that, but again, there's this idea about how sensitive you need to be to another human being. In addition, in the sixth parasha, talks about the prohibition of charging on interest. Right? It's you don't charge interest to another Jew. So I believe it's the Radak who explains this in Tehillim. He makes this very interesting point. He says, you know, if you think about it, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. Like, why can't you charge interest? Give out a loan, if I loan you $1,000, so why can't I make money off of that? I'm allowed to charge you rent, right? If you want to, let's stay in my house for the week, so I can charge you rent using my house. I don't have access to it. I can charge you rent. So when I lend you money, if I lend you $1,000, I don't have access to that $1,000. I can now invest it. I can't make any money off of it. So why can't I charge you for the money that you borrowed from me? That's the Radak's question. And his answer is that really there is nothing wrong with it. And that's why, by the way, you're allowed to charge interest to a non-Jew. Because there's nothing wrong with it. There's absolutely nothing wrong with you can charge anyone for anything, you know, charging rent for using your property. You can charge for rent for using your money. But it's a special, says the Radak, it's a special requirement that we have to our fellow Jew, who the Torah uses the expression, achicha, your brother. That it's a chesed, it's a kindness. And why can't I charge rent on my money, but I can charge rent using my car, using my house? Because when you're using my car, using my house, you see it. You know it's not yours. Right? I'm borrowing someone else's car. So I know it's not mine. And I'm not gonna forget that I got to make payments on using it. But when you lend money to someone, what do they do with that money? They don't hang it on the wall, right? They don't use it, to play Monopoly with. They spend it, right? Why are they? They're borrowing their money because they want to make an investment. Right? They want to use it for them. They want to buy real estate. They want to buy a car, whatever it is. But the money's gone, right? So if the money's gone, it's out of sight, and sometimes people forget about it. And that's the danger with when you borrow money. Because it's not in front of you. It's not like the car that's in front of you. It's gone. You're going to forget about it. And then you don't realize that there's interest payments on it. And those, it's like the credit card. You know, you don't realize, you forget about it. You swipe the card and then you forget, how much money you owe. And before you know it, you get that bill, at the end of the month. And it's this crazy, interest charge. You forgot about it. It wasn't in front of you. And therefore, the Torah says you got to go above and beyond the letter of the law when it comes to your fellow Jew. And you can't put your fellow Jew in a place where they're going to be in a terrible economic position because of the loan that they took. And therefore, the Torah says this is a mitzvah to loan money, but you can't charge interest. And again, and it's purely a chesed; it's a kindness that you need to extend to your fellow Jew. I'll just give you one or two other examples in the parsha. Again, this idea of taking care of your fellow Jew. Here's another one. So it says, "V'chiyamuch achicha umata yado imach." Let's say your fellow Jew becomes impoverished, and they're in dire straits. V'chazak tebo, v'gerat betosha v'chei imach. So you have to strengthen them. You have to take care of them, and then it goes into the laws of not charging interest. But this is the notion of they have to give tzedakah, right? They have to take care of someone in need. And then the Torah says, what happens if the following happens? What happens if someone is so poor and they can't pay back anything, and they owe money all over the place, and they sell themselves as a slave to you? In order to make some money, so the Torah says you got to take care of them, right? Lo sabato avodas aved, that you can't overwork them, and the Chazal says you can't give them degrading tasks and do things that are demeaning towards them. Rather, you got to treat them with kindness. And again, it's a limited time. The longest you can have them as a slave is until the Yovel, until the Jubilee. And then it gives another example. What happens if you have a fellow Jew, your family member, who again is very poor, and he sells himself to a non-Jew, right? He sells himself as a slave to a non-Jew. So what do you need to do in that case? The Torah says you got to redeem him, right? Especially the first person it goes to is the relative, right? The relative has to redeem the person, and because we don't want that person. Not only is it demeaning that they're now working as a slave, but they're going to be in this environment where there's no kosher, there's no Shabbos, there's a avodah zara. It's terrible. So it's an amazing thing. You have this person who did it to themselves, right? They sold themselves to a non-Jew, but you have to get involved. You have to go help them out. One of the relatives has to redeem the person. Right, the uncle, the nephew, someone's got to redeem that person. In other words, I think it's even more than that. I think it's even the relatives made a mistake here. Right, the relatives should never have let the person to get to that position in the first place. Right, you got to. If you see someone who's in dire straits, you have to take care of them, and if you didn't, now you got to rescue them. Right, like sometimes you feel the person did it to themselves, so why should I help out? The Torah says, no, you got to help out. You have to still assist them, even if they did something which is wrong. So there's a few more examples, but it's not a long parsha, but it's a very powerful parsha about. These three ideas, these ideas of emunah b'Hashem, of faith in God, that God ultimately, our lives are in Hashem's hands, and that putting our trust in Hashem, and recognizing everything ultimately comes from Hashem. And we do our part. We work the land for 6 years, but then we sort of recognize that ultimately things are beyond our control, and ultimately Hashem makes decisions. And if Hashem so wants it, he'll support us, he'll help us, he'll get us through those difficult moments, and we hope that that's what will happen. And Hashem promises that He will, take care of us. But ultimately, we recognize that things are out of our hands, and we're not ultimately in control. And therefore, when it comes to land, we give back the land. And the Eved, we give back the Eved when it comes to the Yovel, when it comes to the Jubilee. And then there's this notion of a love for the land of Israel, right? That's the thing about the Ari Choma, that city, that house in the walled city. We don't want you selling it. That we don't want you selling that house. That's your possession in the land of Israel. We want you to maintain it. And only therefore within a year you got to buy it back. So it's hopefully encouraging you to buy it back. And then on the flip side, right, the people who sold their other real estate, they need to get back their land. They have to be taken care of, but also to understand that every Jew has this connection to Israel. Every Jew has to maintain the connection. And then finally, right, mitzvah after mitzvah, this week's parsha is all about taking care of other people. It's all about assisting others. Not taking advantage of other people, not hurting people, and even when people are and themselves maybe get themselves into trouble, maybe it's their own fault. You still have to be kind to them. You still have to get them, help them, and assist them, and that's your responsibility as a Jew towards a fellow Jew. Right? Family takes care of family, and the Jewish people as a whole. We take care of one another. And just circling back to where I came from, again, about my nephew Donnie, again, I think all three of these ideas very much reflect who he was and the example that he continues to set for so many people. There was a bunch of kids, students, put together this beautiful book. It's a book, it's like 80 pages of just recollections of things that they learned from people who knew him, people who didn't learn, know him. And just things that that learning from Donnie of things that they hope to incorporate into their life. I told my brother and sister-in-law after the Shiva, I said, I don't know what this kid did to deserve, Hashem for some reason decided to take him, but I don't know what this kid did to deserve the impact that he's made. And now I see a year later, continues to make on countless individuals. I can't tell you how many people reached out to me today telling me that they did things today in his memory. People like, you know, don't barely know me, didn't know him, didn't know my brother and sister-in-law, and just somehow his life and who he was, it just resonated. He was a normal, regular kid. I wrote about this in an article that I wrote, and I think he set a beautiful example of for what you know, all of us can achieve, and all of us can aspire to attain in life. You know, these ideas of faith in Hashem, a love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a commitment to the land of Israel, and being a good, kind person, and taking care of other people. And it's amazing, you know, sometimes, I quoted in my Yom Kippur drush this year, Rabbi Goldberg, or Rabbi Emeritus, who I've heard him say many times, you know, sometimes, you know, you have a child, and he works with these kids with cancer, they die when they're 5, 6 years old, and it's terrible. But these kids, like, transform the world, you know, the people they interact with, and the impression that they make, and their desire to you know, to love the moments that they have. And you have people who live to 95, 100 years old, and on their deathbed they don't know why they lived, right? And what you know what they were doing in with their life. You know, the people, then they retire from work at 56 years old, and they spend the next 30 years playing golf. And like then what do you do with your life? I played golf. Okay, you played golf. Very nice. But then you have someone like my nephew, again, who for some reason Hashem only gave him 19 years, but he changed the world. And, you know, continues to impact people. And, you know, Hashem makes certain decrees that are beyond our understanding. But we just do what we have, the time that God allots to us. And hopefully, again, these ideas that are reflected in the Parsha and that again, Donnie did beautifully in his life should be things that we should emulate. Kind of faith in Hashem, a love and a commitment and devotion to Eretz Yisrael, and understanding that as Jews, we always need to take care of one another, support each other, and to be there for one another. Wishing everyone a very wonderful and meaningful Shabbos. Take care.